freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Capp there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
All right, Justin, I love this idea, and it's especially relevant today as the Mariners have kind of gone on this little run. And it got me thinking last night. Somebody probably does keep this stat, but I don't know about it, so I'm going to give you credit. And when it's all said and done, we're going to call it the Justin because you came up with the idea. So this will forever be known as the Justin.
Okay.
What, Brock, we know what a quality start is, right?
Yeah, six innings, three runs or less.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Six innings, three runs or fewer is a quality start. What is it when the offense chases a pitcher before they can reach a quality start?
Ooh.
Right? A quality start kill, something like that. We're going to call it a Justin moving forward.
All right.
And maybe you can assign one of your favorite statisticians out there to keep track of the number of Justins that we end up with here in Seattle this year. Maybe if Alex Mayer is around and listening, he could help out from the Mariners' standpoint. I know you like to task your intern, Luke Arkins, with things, so maybe Luke can help out with this.
Watch your mouth.
Well, you treat him like your intern. That's fine. Stop it. That's just what you do. You just, you know, everyone around you kind of works for you, so you kind of treat Luke that way. For the fifth time in seven games, this comes from Ryan Divish yesterday, the Mariners have forced an opposing starter out of the game before he could throw five complete innings.
Why don't we call it the Bedard?
That's funny. That's not only not a quality start, that's not even making it to five, forgetting about six. And maybe that's fair. Maybe it's got to be, you know,
five,
maybe you
got
to keep it to five or less
five
in order
less.
To really be adjusted.
Seriously, we need to,
Bedard.
Five innings or less.
Five and dive. If you make it into the sixth inning, then we're not going to count it as Justin.
I agree.
Yep.
But during that time, opposing starters, according to Daniel Kramer, who added on, have a 6.75 ERA, a whip of 1.88, which is atrocious, a strikeout-to-walk ratio of 1.33, and the Mariners have hit with a 403 on-base percentage and a 929 OPS. Those are spectacular numbers. While we sit here and rave, obviously, about the pitching staff, which, as I mentioned earlier, has allowed a grand total of six runs in their last seven games. That's less than a run per game, which is insane. And if you take out extra innings, that number drops by another two. Crazy. One of those runners they shouldn't even be, you know, accounted
for. Right, true.
It is also worth noting, Brock, that during that time, the Mariners have struck out an average of 9.1 times per game. Their strikeouts during that seven-game stretch where they've battered around opposing starters are 10, 10, 10, 3, 9, 15, and 7. They're still striking
high.
Out the same
still
amount.
High.
There's almost no difference in the amount that they're striking out. They had one good game where they struck out three times, one really bad game at 15. Other than that, they're still always going to be in that 9 to 10 strikeouts per game range. It's not really improved. But when you do everything else, when you get home runs, which they've done during that stretch, when you take your walks, when you work counts, strikeouts in bad moments are really bad. Strikeouts in a moment when, you know, you've got runners on base and you have an opportunity in the seventh inning to blow a game open, those are bad. A strikeout in the third inning where you work a count and make the pitcher throw eight pitches?
Correct.
Nothing wrong with that as an at bat. That's a good bat.
I mean, I think that is the difference, too. And I was just looking up, Eugenio struck out four times last night.
Teo, his numbers still, are down.
They are. And Teo still top. I think he's second. Yes, but he's still second or third in strikeouts.
His
and the difference with those guys strike out a lot, Salk, but they don't. And they just didn't work the counts. They didn't, you know, Mitch strikes out a couple times last night. He works at the full count. There's an eight or nine pitch, you know. And those things matter. That helps you get adjusted. That helps you chase that guy. Okay, there's going to be some swing and miss. You're gonna do some of that. But there's not the chase rate that you find with a Teo or the chase rate I think you find with Eugenio. Or just the lack of, you know, just really stressing. I love that. You know, what Scott has said from the beginning. Want to make it hard on opponents. Want to stress them. Put some pressure on that pitcher. And they certainly have done that in this stretch over the last couple weeks. So much better than they did the first couple weeks. And, oh, by the way, going back to the first couple weeks, turns out Boston starters,
pretty good.
Turns out Cleveland right now is the best team in baseball, record-wise. Like, I mean, turns out they're pretty good, too. And certainly you got Bieber and before he tore his elbow all up and had surgery and everything else. So, yeah, I kind of like this, Justin. I'm kind
of
into that.
I mean, somebody offered up the quality kill, just a QK instead of a QS. And that's always simple.
Well, those can be two different things. We'll call it a QK if the other starter doesn't get a quality start.
Okay.
But if you can knock the starting pitcher out before he enters the sixth inning,
to get it, yep.
That's a Justin.
Okay.
You've done something special. And Justin, this will forever bear your name. And we just need somebody to keep track of it for us.
Adjusting, which I guess also works because you're adjusting.
You're adjusting. You're making the adjustments you need to make. Yeah. No, this is a Justin.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Okay. So now we've got a new stat. Brock, are you excited? I know you're an analytics guy.
I totally am. I'm totally into
that. I love analytics.
I love numbers. So I'm analytics.
You're an analytics guy. So here you go.
There's no else. You know who else I love? And everybody is loving right now, and they've loved for years.
I love Jimmy Neutron.
And back to our conversation earlier about the Seahawks taking steps, finding kind of mid-round picks that take steps, Salk, and you know, find international signings that take steps and are difference makers. Kyle was a third-round pick. He wasn't a first-round pick. He wasn't a top-10 pick. Yeah, he wasn't an Adley Rutschman pick. He wasn't hyped with all that stuff that some are. Cal right now, over the last year plus, is arguably the best catcher in baseball.
That's true.
And I was infuriated, absolutely infuriated, when they had a top 10 catcher list before the year began, and they didn't even have Cal Raleigh in the top 10.
Right.
Come on,
which
I mean,
is really dumb.
It's beyond stupid. What he does as a catcher, what he does framing, what he does controlling the run game, awesome, awesome, top 5, top 10. What he does with his bat, what he does with his power, what he does with his home runs, he's right now, the numbers will tell you he's the best catcher in baseball through the last year and 20 some games to begin this year.
Yeah.
And I don't get why he doesn't get the credit. Is it because Julio's getting all of it? Is it because the pitching gets all of it? Is it because we are a bit geographically removed? I mean, it's time for Cal to start getting the credit in the league that he is due. Right? The Buster Posey's the elite catchers for all of those years. It's hard, man. It is hard to catch, and he's catching a lot. And then it's hard to hit with power and doing what he does at the plate as a switch hitter. So I just, that's a little.
You know what'll help?
That's a little.
You know what'll help Cal? Seriously. You know what may have helped Cal this week was Sebi Zavala having that three-hit game. Because he can't, you can't ask him to do as much as he's done so far this year and play him every game. You can't.
He's going to wear down. He's absolutely going to wear down.
And if it wasn't going to be Sebi Zavala, eventually it was going to have to be somebody else because you need to have a quality backup catcher who can at least take one game a week off of Cal's knees. And so the fact that he did go out there and get three hits in a game, he's going to have to catch either tonight or tomorrow. I'm curious whether he catches Bryce Miller or whether he catches Luis Castillo. I don't know. Because if not, if they don't trust him in either of those situations, now Cal's got to catch two more games this week. Now, they've had the extra day, right? They had Monday off, so I'm sure that helps them. But I would really like to make sure that they have somebody who can take some of the load off.
I mean, I know this is just my amateur little mind, but there's part of me that thinks maybe Mitch Garver needs to catch a game just to get himself into rhythm.
I wouldn't have a problem with that.
And I don't know if maybe his back, quite honestly, and we say this all the time when guys are struggling, we don't know until after the fact and early in the year.
Especially in Texas right now where he was so comfortable the last couple of years.
Yep. I don't know. I just maybe his back is worse than we thought. Maybe it's flared up and he's trying to suck it up. And, you know, he missed some time earlier. And those are one of the things that we never hear until after the fact. But I don't know, man. For a guy that's scuffling a little bit and trying to find a rhythm as an everyday DH.
I'll tell you what, his back really is bothering him. I would love to see him take a week or two off and just get right. Because that's not going to heal by continuing to play through it. And they do have Luke Raley right now. And they do have Class A up right now. And if they need to IL him for 10 days and they can bring up another bat to kind of help out short term, I think I would rather see that. Or if it's not the back and he's totally healthy, I don't have any problems with getting him in the game as a backup catcher, especially in Texas where he's so comfortable and has been there before.
It's kind of the inverse of what they did with Julio earlier in the year or Ty France early in the year when he was on paternity leave. Like, it's the inverse. It's like, no, you're going to catch. But in the same way, it gets your mind thinking on doing what?
Yeah.
Running the team and catching and off of just, gosh, here's I got another bat in, you know, an hour to get myself ready for it.
I think there's something to
that.
Did
you guys hear Cal post game after when he got to do his interview with Dave Sims and Mike Flowers? It's pretty good hearing.
I think outside the box for them. Cal, thank you very much. Great win, man. First place feels good, right?
We got a long way to go, dude.
I know, but it's still first place.
That's right. Nice game.
Let's tone it down. Just like last place wasn't great, didn't matter a week or so ago, neither does first place today. Pretty darn funny.
Love that, dude.
All right. Well, speaking of people we love, Michael Bumpus is going to be in studio with us here in about a half hour. We got everything you need to know, including some breaking news that doesn't matter, next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, we just spent some time talking about it, Brock. It is a formula, just like Dr. Dre and DOC.
What is that, Dre?
It's the formula.
That's right. It's just the formula. And when Julio does his thing and start hitting bombs like this one.
It's not homered yet. 1-0. Swinging a high fly ball out to left field. Number one is sailing away. How far? Midway up the second deck.
I would like to say that, you know, Goldsmith called it by saying he hadn't hit a home run yet, but I've heard each announcer for the Mariners mention that approximately 3 million times over the last week or two. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can get credit for it, but it did sound great seeing him hit the home run right after Goldsmith mentioned it, and they needed it. Cal hit one as well, and then Logan just took it from there.
Gilbert comes home with the pitch.
Strike three called. 96, a touch off the plate. He gets the call, and Langford ends the inning. Third punch out for Gilbert. He strands the double.
Yeah, he went 6 2/3, didn't allow a run. I said earlier, didn't really have his best command, but he was able to use that cutter. Scott Service loved it.
It plays off his fastball. You know, they're going to always hunt Logan's fastball. They're going to get on him. He's throwing really hard, and he's aggressive with his fastball, and it just gives him another look. And you saw some awkward swings early with it. I thought it was really effective. He'll continue to use it. It does have a little bit of separation between the fastball and the slider. It sits in the middle, and it's got just enough late movement. It looks just like his fastball, so it's an effective pitch. And the more he throws it, I think the more success he's going to have with it and better feel for it in the strike zones.
When you think of the cutter, who do you think of?
Mariano Rivera.
That's right. And who was Mariano Rivera most deadly against in life?
Lefties.
Lefties.
Because it burrowed in right on their hands.
Put it right in on the hands over and over and over again and watch them hit ground balls to second base. And that's kind of what you saw from Logan. And it is such an effective pitch, if you can throw it like that, to just help you get through games and get deeper into them.
It's about tunnels, Salk. Okay, it's about all the different tunnels.
I don't know if that one's just about tunnels, but it's certainly helpful to get in on people's hands.
Yeah, you know, we say this about baseball guys all the time, especially those that cover the game and they're there on a daily basis and they're watching it. It wasn't just Goldie that called that home run. It was the Texas Rangers guys as well, their radio team right beforehand. I don't know, maybe they watched BP after a day off and were like, good Lord Almighty, at some point this guy, this creature is going to hit one to the moon. And at 109 miles an hour and 427 feet, it was a bomb.
You know what's crazy is that the ball we saw him hit in spring training was 120.
Yes.
That is just unthinkable, basically. Anyway, nice job by the Mariners last night. They do move into first place for whatever that's worth. More importantly, their pitching has been dominant. They've allowed a total of 6 runs in their last 7 games. They've won 6 of 7. They've won 8 of 11. They're playing some good ball.
Okay, so hold on 1 second. I know it's a long season. I know a series in April is meaningless when it comes to the end. But you can't tell me you didn't beat them in their building last year. You weren't competitive in their building last year. You can't tell me that doesn't matter, right? You just
I didn't
like
say it doesn't matter.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying like overall
I'm not saying
the big
it doesn't
scheme.
Matter. Don't, oh, it's don't a, put that on
no,
me.
No, no, no. I'm not saying
don't put
you,
that on me.
I'm not putting that on you, Hemi. Okay, I'm not doing that at all. I'm just saying when you did not beat them once in their building
it's
last year, and they
Yes. And that's what Passan was telling us earlier this week, right? That there is a psychological element to it and trying to get yourself over that hump. So good. Good on them. That's an important win for them. Hopefully win a series, win one of the next 2 games, and you're going to come home really happy.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, in the meantime, Brock, a draft tomorrow. This is the final stretch, last little tinkering being done. And I'm sure one of the big things that John Schneider and his team are up to right now, just trying to figure out whether there are deals to be made and whether or not they're going to even be picking at number 16. And it's not just about the 16 pick. Obviously, there are other times and trades that we could see some action. What are they going to do there? Who knows? I mean, Penix an option. Faltano's an option. Going defense. You know, we've sort of discounted Byron Murphy, I think, a little bit. But you talked to Mark Dominic yesterday, and, man, that was like the guy that, after listening to him, you would want.
I think he's a stud. I love this player. I think he's got quick twitch. He's got different rush moves. He certainly can beat you inside on one-on-ones, but he's also able to get small and skinny and split double teams and create a lot of problems. You know, it's interesting. I always felt like this league has never valued TFLs the way it should. TFLs are sacks. And until we start to look at TFLs as the same as sacks and start to, like, really, you know, support that, I think this guy's a TFL monster, and I think he could be a good sacker. I think he's going to go, though. I think he's the first defensive player off the board.
All right, so maybe he will be, maybe he won't be. That has not been the general projection from folks.
Yeah.
If he's there, is that kind of TFL action worth taking?
Yeah, that's how you start to build a wall and then puncture that wall, right? You have some of the size and the strength of Leonard and Jaren, and then you add this little... He's not even little. He's a 300-pound muscle ball. I mean, when you see him in person, he is like Puna Ford was 5'11 and a half, but Puna was not a ball of muscle and did not have the explosive fiber that this guy does in every single way. So you're right, man. This is intriguing. It's the most intriguing draft. I don't know if it's the best draft. It's the most intriguing, and the Seahawks sitting right in the middle of the first round, kind of at a fulcrum point, makes it that much more interesting.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, all the interest in this country is on Caitlin Clark right now, and for good reason. Everything she did in college, she'll continue her association with Nike, Brock. She signs a $28 million deal that will span 8 years, includes a signature shoe as well. I kind of psyched to see that. So here's my question. Will they make a men's version of the Caitlin Clark shoe?
Oh, good question.
I would wear that, depending on what it looks like. Like, that sounds awesome.
I would think it would come in men's and women's sizes. You don't want to limit yourself, right?
Sabrina Ionescu's shoe is really big with the NBA players.
Is it?
So, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
I would think so.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool.
What are you, a size 7, 8? What are you?
Me? 11 and a half. What are you talking about, size 7? Why do you say these things?
What is the deal with Brock trying to just minimize everybody's body?
Isn't it obnoxious?
What?
Really is. I wear a size 11 and a half shoe. Why would you say that?
You think I didn't do that on 100% purpose?
I know what you do on purpose, but you do it, and that's all anybody hears.
You're 11 and a half.
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
You really should have been 6'2".
I know.
You really, really should have been
6'2". I know that. If I was 6'2", everything would be fine.
You know, one thing I'm not buying either? I saw a tweet from Diana Taurasi's net worth of like $3.5 million, right? The Caitlin's going to make more in 1 year with Nike than Diana's made in 20 years.
I'm sure that'll make her real happy.
Well, I'm saying no chance.
You don't buy it.
I'm not buying that for a second. Not only from endorsements, but playing overseas. Yeah, from the WNBA contract, so that's all you added up, but she has made a ton of dough playing overseas.
I still don't know how well that's going to go over the fact that that even comes out as a possibility. That's everything you need
every
to know.
Time. We talked all this time about Jimmy Neutron today. Like, whenever Jimmy Neutron would come up, he had like a problem. He was a smart kid. He was a boy genius, and he had a problem. He had to come up with the solution, right? And he would say, like, he'd go into his head, and he'd go, brain blast. I feel like that's what Brock does every time he tries to think of finding something to say about somebody's body.
Yes.
Brain blast!
Especially Salk, to be fair. Especially my co-host of 15 years.
You have found to torture. What are you drinking?
It's just coffee.
Oh, okay. It's out of a clear mug. I thought you were drinking tea. I've never seen you do that before. I've never seen
Only little people drink tea. I don't drink tea.
Oh, my gosh. What is the matter with you? Michael Bump is going to be in a couple minutes. He and Brock are all part of the big coverage tomorrow for the draft here on Seattle Sports.
Big coverage.
How dare you? Don't interrupt me. I'm flowing right now.
Never
you're
known a big man to drink tea. It's always
you are interrupting my flow right now, Justin. I don't appreciate it. I'm like DOC, man. I got flow.
It's the form.
That's right. I'll be right back. I'm Brock Gasol.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I was just looking at those Sabrina Ionescu ones, Brock, on the Nike app. They're actually pretty cool. But it looks like, well, they do have men's sizes. They don't seem to have larger men's sizes. So I don't know whether I can get one of these. Not going to need it tomorrow. That's really a basketball shoe. Tomorrow is going to be more of a running day, obviously. So I'm going to have my running shoes on. Going to be fleet of foot. Can't wait. I've been stretching throughout the morning. I don't know if I told you I wore, stretchier pants today so that I could make sure I stretched throughout the morning. I didn't want to, like, rip jeans or anything.
Right.
So I've just been stretching the hamstrings and just making sure that everything is loose as a goose for tomorrow.
Good.
Moore seems to think that that's, like, some sort of gymnastics preparation, and it's not about that. This is just about making sure that I stay healthy.
I just... I mean, I've run for a long time. I just think day of stretching is more important. Like, it's good to stretch and stay healthy and flexible, but I don't think that it's necessarily something you build up.
You don't think you can do that in 48 hours? You don't think you can become flexible in 48 hours?
Probably not.
Well, shows what you know.
You thought about going barefoot at all?
You know, I did read Born to Run, which was a game changer in my life. One of the best books I've ever read. And more jokes aside, you should read Born to Run. As somebody who runs distances the way you do, one of the best books I've ever read. And if you didn't just have a birthday, I would get you one for your next birthday. In fact, I might bring in my copy for you anyway, because I think you'll love it. And they
you can sign it for her after you beat her.
I will. Yes. After I beat you, I'll put the date and my time and everything else.
It'll be super
and I'll
sweet.
Sign it right on the cover for you. Yes. But it changed my life. I loved that book and really was the first time I was ever able to start running more than like a mile or two at a time. And eventually ran a couple of half marathons and stuff, which was cool. But, there's a long section in there on the barefoot running and how it's like great for your knees and everything else. And while I'm sure they're right, I'm not doing it.
And there's no way you're bumping more, right? Like who is a Mary Decker with a barefoot lady?
That's a good question. So is there physicality allowed on the racetrack?
No.
Right. Did you make in the turn all
what
of a sudden?
If somebody like, you know,
are you going inside or outside? Who's on the inside lane?
I'm on the inside. Maura's on the outside.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Maura can't bump you either.
No.
Okay.
Do we want to be too...
I mean, you can't bump someone that you're so far ahead of.
Do we want to be two lanes apart so that we're farther apart from each other? Or do we want to be coming down neck and neck in the two lanes next to each other?
Do you want some room so you don't trip over Maura's hands? Like, consider that as an option.
I was thinking about that. Like, if she gets wide with those fingers, maybe I need to be two lanes.
I don't know what kind of runner she is. Does she keep the arms in, you know?
Maura, having done this, you've been a track star.
Tyrannabird. Yeah, when did you flap your fingers in the face of your opponent? Is that one of your things, maybe?
That's not what I was going to ask.
The Tyrannabird nickname was because when I got tired, I just let my arms dangle pretty much by my side. Wow. But because he got in my head about calling me that, my coach, I think now I pump my arms pretty well because it's in my head.
Nice. What are the rules on staying in your lane? So do you stay in your lane all the way, or do you just, because the end of it's a straightaway?
I mean, in a distance race, you cut over, but it's usually because everyone's spread out.
Oh,
I don't
have
think
to stay
you
in
do.
Your lane.
You stay you in your stay lane. In a sprint.
You stay all the way in your lane you the whole way, right?
Absolutely.
So one
or you're DQ'd.
DQ.
And I'll be watching like a hawk.
I'm
I'll
sure
DQ
you,
Salk. I will DQ you faster. I'll make your head spin.
That'll be great. I can't wait to get DQ'd for stepping onto the line. That will be quite the
509's asking if we're live streaming. We're not going that far, but we are going to have some video taken that we will put up later.
There's a lot of debate about the use of slow-mo and whether or not it will be so slow. Like, they're going to run the photo finish and be like, yeah, don't need to slow that down at all. They're moving very, very slowly. Frame by frame is unnecessary here.
What if it's essentially a tie?
I mean, that's what Cecily was hoping for. She was hoping for a tie. Cecily, though, I should mention, also wants Bruin to race Gertie, which should be very sure. That would not be a good race.
Like 55-pound lab mix versus a Frenchie puppy.
A 14-pound Frenchie puppy? You don't think that's a good race? Mm. I got two puppies at my house
right now.
I think
even 9-year-old Bruin could probably take her.
I got 9-year-old Nala at my house right now, Brock. I've never had two dogs in my life. And we are watching Nala, who is a friend's dog, and she's great. 9-year-old Frenchie. In fact, Nala is part of the reason that we got Gertie, because soon after Wendell had passed away, I was walking in the neighborhood with the kids and saw Nala walking with her people and went over and started talking to them. I was like, hey. This is when I was offering my free Frenchie watching service. I was like, if you ever need somebody to watch your dog, I'll do it. And they were like, okay. And they ended up calling me and brought the dog over. And we watched Nala one afternoon. And now we've like worked out a little swap. So Nala is over at our house this week, just hanging out. And Gertie's going to go to their house in a couple of weeks when we go away. And so I walked both dogs yesterday for the first time. Now, maybe I have friends who have been professional dog walkers. And maybe you guys have all walked two dogs before. Generally, it seems fine. You hold the leash in one hand, both leashes, and the dogs just start walking. But you try to walk two French bulldogs at the same time. It's a totally different experience. Yeah. Because when you walk French bulldogs, every once in a while, and when I say every once in a while, I mean constantly, they just stop moving. And so I'm trying to walk these two dogs. I have both leashes in one hand. And every 30 to 45 seconds, I would say, one of the two dogs would just stop.
Huh.
And you're like, okay, so you get that dog going, then the other dog just stops. So you're not moving very far, very fast in the walk. Eventually, what I had to do was put one leash in each hand so that I could walk both dogs and give each of them a tug whenever one of them would just stop walking.
I love it.
Yeah, it's been quite the experience trying to watch these dogs. Anyway, somebody says they don't count as dogs. That's not very nice. How dare you? That's my dog. Why would you say that about my dog? All right. Michael Bumpus is on his way in. You guys are going to be working together a little bit here over the weekend tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Not even the weekend, Saul. You get the weekend. The Draft Knicks get the weekend.
Doesn't it feel like it should be Thursday already? Like, I woke up this morning pretty darn convinced that today was Thursday, but it's not. We don't have draft day until tomorrow. So, Bump, I've worked with Bump for the draft, by the way. Mm-hmm. Have you ever worked with Bump on the draft?
No.
All right, so here's what you should know. A couple years ago, 2 years ago, it was a Saturday, and I went in for the morning shift. That's my shift. I mean, everyone knows I'm kind of a draft Nick. Right. I know the guys deep in the draft, so everybody wants to put me on, like, Saturday morning to really talk through the
You watch 20 hours of college football every Saturday during the season.
I do watch 20 hours of college football every year. That's right. And so I'm ready for the draft. I watch the, you know, all 22s, the whole thing. Jokes aside. I'm sitting there with Bump a couple of years ago, and we're waiting on the draft, and the Seahawks have, what was that? It must have been a fifth-round pick, right? They draft some rando named Tariq Woolen. Nobody knows how to pronounce a name, and Bump's like, this is the guy. He's like, I've been watching film on this dude. He's unbelievable. He's out of a small school. Wait till you see him. He's going to be awesome. Bump was on top of Tariq Woolen. He knew all about Kobe Bryant. Working with him that day, seriously, jokes aside, he actually knew all that stuff, and it was awesome. So you are very lucky to get to work with Bump tomorrow, and he's joining us right now. What's up, dude?
What up? Thanks for the gas, man. Fill me up early in the morning. I appreciate that.
I've been impressed ever since. I'd never been impressed with you until that moment.
Bump, have you ever worked with the two old man Muppets we're going to work with tomorrow night?
For sure. Yeah, you know, I've been around the block a couple of times with those guys, so I'm ready to go. I'm excited to work with you, though, man. The voice, the Saturday, UFL, NFL, NCAA, you do it all, man.
You lead with UFL, huh?
Yeah, you know.
That's an interesting lead.
It's in season.
You're leading with the UFL?
It's in season.
All right. I mean, I guess you're building up strong to the
Bump, I feel like you and I are going to look at each other a lot. We're going to be on the outside. Bob and Dave will be sitting on the inside.
Yeah.
And you and I are just going to be like locked in gaze. We're going to be talking. We're going to be energized. And Wyman and Bob are going to look at us like, what is wrong with you two? What is seriously wrong with you two guys? But I think that affection for college football, Wyman has it as well. Been listening to his draft profiles. Big picture before we get to the nitty gritty on some of these guys. Just big picture. This draft for you compared to covering previous ones, where does this one sit?
This one is, I'm the most intrigued in a different way because there's a lot going on, right? We get to see what the influence Mike McDonald is going to have on the draft. But most importantly, John Schneider. I said this yesterday on our show. I go, he's in the cockpit by himself. Now, Mike McDonald is there. He's in first class. You know, he gets to meet the pilot before and after the flight and maybe even knock on the door and have a few words during the flight. But this is John Schneider's show, and I'm excited to see what direction he puts it. 14 years, they've only drafted two quarterbacks. We know he wants to draft a quarterback. So now I'm looking at 16. I'm like, are you going to do it? You going to roll the dice at 16? Or are you going to wait until the later rounds in the draft and get a quarterback? Are you going to go offensive line? It's a big moment for this organization, man.
All right, so let's just answer the question. Give me I want to hear one name right now. Number 16 rolls around. And all of these players are available. It's impossible because some of them will have had to go. But this is more of about what you would like. Michael Penix is there.
Mm-hmm.
Troy Faltano is there. Byron Murphy is there.
Mm.
Jared Verse is there. Latu is there. I'll give you those five.
All right.
Who are you taking?
See.
What do you mean, see?
That's the tough part.
You have to start with giving me a name. All that's the rules of the game.
I'm going to walk you through it first, my thought process at least. Okay. I'm looking at this team and I go, who has to lead the charge on this team this year? It has to be the offense. The defense is under mass construction. I get that. There's some pieces there already. But I look at the offense and I go, you guys got to come out ready to go. You can't let the defense hold you down and then you find your footing. No, offense has to go. Last year, Geno took, 10 less socks than he did the year before. People forget that about Geno. They're like, oh, Geno holds on to the football. He doesn't do this and that. Yeah, he might hold on to the football. Watch the all 22. You'll see that safety rolling down to that robber spot. You'll see a linebacker dropping into space. There's a reason why he held the football. So I'm looking at the offense, and I go, you have to get better on offense right now. Defense, I feel like you can find the diamonds in the roughs, like the Tariq Woolens, like the Kobe Bryant, even though he won a diamond in the rough. He didn't get the love he deserves. But you can find just dogs on defense later in the rounds, later in the draft, and get those guys going. So I'm going Troy Faltanu off top. When's the last time this team has been at its best? Is when that offensive line is solidified. Yes, the Legion of Boom, you can point at that. I get it. You'll never see Legion of Boom again, folks. It will never happen in Seattle again. You will not get a top 10 defense of all time. The times have changed. The game has changed. It's an offensive game. They take care of the offense. They take care of the quarterbacks. They take care of the receivers. Protect your quarterback. All those guys are worthy. I love Latu Latu. He's probably my favorite out of those guys, but I'm going Troy Faltanu.
A little side note, something I've learned because I fly quite a bit. Thank your pilot when you get a soft landing, because more than likely they're an Air Force pilot. I've learned that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. If you get a soft landing, and I don't think that's just a hubris and arrogant thing out of the Air Force guys, but I've kind of learned through the years that the softer landing.
I'm going to tell that to my buddy Chris, who flew Harriers in the Navy for the Marines.
Yeah, sure.
And he will tell you he feels very differently about Air Force pilots.
866-979-3776.
Right. So
866-979-3776.
So you're saying they couldn't have been a Marine or
better
Navy
pilot, Air Force or Navy, better pilot. Wow. Just go hit. Yeah, let's hit that sucker out.
That's definitely a war.
A bump. Outside of Faltanu, take him off the board. All the other Huskies, your favorite Husky that's going to get drafted?
Oh, my favorite is Rome. Come on, you know I'm a receiver guy. And yes. Me personally, I've been met with a lot of pushback with this. I think he's the best receiver in this draft. And that's a lot coming from me. I'm a Coug, but I'm also a realist. I watched the film. I think Marvin Harrison is sharp. I think the offense he was in allowed him to display a lot more of his route running. You look at what UW asked Rome Odunze to do. It's like, look, man, 1-on-1, go over the top. Just run a rub route. We're going to beat him. Penix is going to throw you the football. You go ahead and track him. But when you really look at the film, you break things down. I think Rome's the best receiver in this league. I think Neighbors is a heck of an athlete. I think Brian Thomas is a heck of an athlete. I think Marvin has the pedigree, and naturally he's going to get the nod. But I look at Rome Odunze, and I think at the end of the day, it's about catching the football. Brock, and you know this. In the NFL, there are some guys who run some sloppy you-know-what routes. Sloppy. But they get to the spot, and for some reason, it works for them. I don't think Rome is that, but I think because of what he can do with just catching the football, once he's really allowed to show his route running and be the complete receiver, people will see what I'm seeing. But, I mean, goodness gracious, he's going to go, what, top 15? He ain't going nowhere.
Mm-mm.
You guys had a good debate this week about pressure. Right? About who's got the most pressure on them, whether it's John Schneider or Mike McDonald. I found myself thinking about it a lot, trying to figure out how I would answer that question. And maybe there's not an easy answer to it because both of them have some amount of pressure. It's not like it's 100% on one or the other. But after thinking about it for a while, I think I fairly decisively think it's John Schneider.
Okay.
I don't know how much pressure you can realistically put on a first-year head coach who's very young, who's he's got a lot of challenges ahead of him, clearly, right? I mean, even just this last week with the stupid Picturegate thing, trying to figure out how to navigate replacing a legend like Pete Carroll, removing the basketball hoop, changing around that's hard, and it's going to rub people the wrong way. So I think he might have more challenges ahead of him than John Schneider does. But in terms of pressure, especially when you go through and read this over the cap thing that we got today about some of the problems the Seahawks have had in the draft for the last decade plus, it should be squarely on the shoulders of John Schneider in terms of pressure. This is his show.
Yeah, Stacey made some good points when it comes to why Mike McDonald will have the pressure. And her point was that that's the easy route. That's what people are going to say. That's what the national media is going to say. That's what fans are going to say. What is Mike McDonald doing? But because he's 36 years old, first-time head coach. Because you have a first-year offensive coordinator, first-year defensive coordinator, whole bunch of rookies on that staff offensively and defensively, who is the conductor of all of this? It's John Schneider. John Schneider said, I'm going to hire this young cat and give him a chance. John Schneider has had his hands all over the hiring process, and John Schneider has to make the picks with Mike McDonald's influence, of course, but John has to make the picks to equip this young man with all of the weapons. And if you think Mike McDonald is going to come in here and these guys are going to win 12 or 13 games, then I would love to live life through the lens that you see that thing in, because I just don't see it happening. And that's not a bad thing, because you got to crawl before you walk. It takes time. Mike McDonald needs to be supported. That's John Schneider's job. And I'm excited for John because I think he can do it. But, yeah, it has to be John Schneider. I think once the season starts and you want to look at the tabloids and then the headlines and all that stuff, they're going to point to Mike McDonald. But if you dig deeper, if you're not just surface-level type stuff, you understand that it's the guy upstairs making the decision that has to support this man. Therefore, the pressure is on him. Mike McDonald will take all the bullets, though.
Lucky him.
Yeah.
So with all that said, Bump, tomorrow night when we're sitting down there at the VMAC and you and me and Wyman and Bob covering all these picks in this draft, do you think it looks and feels differently with Mike McDonald sitting next to John than it did with Pete for 14 years?
Oh, yeah, it has to, right? I mean, you want it to. If we wanted the same thing, then bring Pete Carroll back and let's do it all again. You want it to be different. And this is the maturation of John Schneider. John's a grown man. I love John. I'm not taking nothing away from him. But he's always had his homie, you know, to the right of him. And they're going back and forth, and they got this relationship. So now he leaves home like I did Culver City, 20 years ago? And I never returned. I'm still here in Washington, right? Now it's time to go out and be your own person. I think John has always been that, but always with the help and influence of Pete Carroll. So it has to be different. I think Mike McDonald should defer to John Schneider. I think John should take the lead on this. And that's what's going to happen, and that's what should happen. We want change here. Everyone, Jody wanted change. John wanted change. That's why Pete is gone. It better feel different.
Okay, so we spend 90% of our time talking about just the 10%, that first round, right? We spend so much time talking about 16 and trading down and all these prospects. But when it's said and done on Saturday, when Mora closes it out with C-Rodge, right? And right after Stacy and Salk Saturday morning, and you've got the whole group in totality, what do you want this draft class to look like?
I want it to look like the needs were met. So I'm looking at the offensive line. By the way, I love how they're building this roster. 1 year deal, go ahead and prove it, man. We believe in you, but you got to prove it. But I need that offensive line solidified. I need a rookie that is coming in to compete for a starting spot, not just a guy that you're trying to develop. I think that was Oluwatimi last year, right? You bring him in, we'll see what happens, see how he develops. Defensively, I think you need bodies on that defensive line. There's going to be a rotation. I would love to have an Aaron Donald or Chris Jones, another Leonard Williams type of guy.
A Byron Murphy,
yes.
A Jared Furst.
Exactly.
I mean, you can get one of those if you want them. You already want to ignore that.
You could get one of those if you
want
to.
You're going to
get one. And that's the thing on defense, Salt. I mean, goodness, you – defense, and no disrespect to defenders out there, I think defense is necessary, okay?
No, you need it. But on defense,
those are the positions where you meet a bunch of guys that said, I ain't started playing football till 10th grade. And I got out there, and I started balling out. Because you're a raw, fierce athlete. On defense, it's all about reacting. On offense, you got to be a bit more technical.
You are rough, rugged car wreck. That's what you are.
That's what they call Jared Verse.
Yes.
That's what they call Jared Verse, exactly. A rough, rugged car wreck.
So offensively, just make sure that offensive line is all right. On defense, man, depth. Get yourself another linebacker. Get you a defensive lineman. Even if you like a safety that's out there, I know you brought in a couple safety. If you like a safety that's out there, go ahead and get yourself another safety. I'm all about shopping at Costco on defense and then shopping at Nordstrom's on offense. You feel me? Like, get yourself what you need, the expensive piece on offense. On defense, go to Costco and buy in bulk.
Interesting. Number one item at Costco? What's your number one? Are you a Costco guy, Bob?
Well, my wife does the shopping. Thank you, babe. I appreciate you. Because Costco is my nightmare.
Really?
I cannot stand
it. You can't go in there.
There's just too many people, man.
She buy your clothes, too? You go to Nordstrom yourself? Or does she buy your clothes?
She hooks me up. So I go to
work. You don't
work.
Do any of that.
I go to work. I take the kids to practice. I make dinner when I can. She is the conductor of this whole situation over here.
Maestro.
Hey, your partner, Stacy.
Costco shopper.
I can't believe what she's doing. She's gone online. She's taken to Twitter or X or whatever the heck you call it, and has put out a poll just in the last 10 minutes.
Okay.
Saying, for the life of me, I still can't figure out why Salk thinks he can beat Mora in this upcoming foot race. What level of delusion would you use to categorize it? Hashtag pray for Salk. Light delusion, moderate delusion, high delusion, or concerning delusion? Bump, didn't you run track? You're like a nine sport varsity athlete,
I did,
right?
I did several things.
You ever run a 200?
Yes.
All right, what can you tell us about it? Maura, don't listen. What kind of advice can you give me on the 200?
Run your race. If y'all were running like an indoor 60, I might give you a chance. But because you're running a 200,
yeah.
It's
wow.
200, like she more as well, like 5'9", 5'10".
She's 5'10".
5'10". She's got that nice little stride.
I'm 5'10".
You seem like
you're the same height.
You're built for explosiveness.
Yes.
She's built for the long run.
No doubt. 200 meter run. 400, no chance.
200. Once you get around 110 meters, man, them legs are going to get heavy. That head's going to tilt back. I'm telling you.
So you think that I could take her up to about 100, but at 200, no chance.
I give you up to 80.
Up 80 to 80? Meters. So you 80 think I'd meters. Lose 100?
80 meters.
Wow. I am horrified by this. Okay.
I know that she runs. Like she runs. When's the last time you opened up and ran your fastest?
3 days ago.
3 days ago.
Oh, you've been training for this.
Well, I trained once.
Okay.
I went out to the track and ran a 200.
How did that feel?
It felt fine, actually.
Did you get a time on it?
I do, yeah, but I'm not going to reveal my time. I can't, you know, I don't want to give her an advantage and let her know how fast she's going to run.
And how hard was it? It was hard. 200 is tough.
It's not that hard.
Man.
400 is tough. 200 is not that tough.
Okay, I respect you, then.
Now, look, I wasn't all out freaking Michael Johnson running that thing in 19 seconds.
You were 58, 57 seconds?
Yeah, I was in the 50s. That's not a problem, is it?
I'm interested, though. I'm, you know what, I hope, you know, I don't hope. I hope everyone just has fun.
You hope everybody doesn't get hurt.
Exactly, makes it out safely.
Have we inquired about the ambulance? Will there be an ambulance following us like they do with the horse race? Will we have an ambulance on the track ready to pick somebody
just
up
buzzards,
at a moment's
I think,
notice?
Mostly.
Oh, buzzards! Yeah, that sounds even better. All right,
Bubba, by the way, Stacey, Brock, yes. 3-1 Navy over Air Force on your little poll.
God, that sounds about right. They got to land on little aircraft carriers, man. They don't. I mean, Navy's going to dominate that thing. Bump. Thank you. Bump
Thank
and Stacy coming up later today.
Right,
what you guys got today?
Man, whole bunch of stuff. Obviously, we're talking draft, heavy draft. We got the Mariners who finally got a win in Arlington last night. Big ups, Cal, and everybody else getting that going. Logan looking like a beast.
I thought you were
going
to say, I don't know, man. Curtis takes all care of all that. My wife takes care of all the shopping. I just show up and do what everybody tells me when it's all said and done.
Hey, what's the play, coach?
What's
the
play?
I got you. I'll get open.
Well, I'll tell you what. Bump knew his stuff a couple years ago, and something tells me he'll be ready to go tomorrow afternoon as well, along with Wyman and Bob and Brock. That is the draft coverage scene here on Seattle Sports. Bump and Stacy are up here in an hour. We'll be right back with Brock's final draft profile. This is his favorite, and it's next on Brock and Salk.